Honestly, don't you two read?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Welcome to Bookrand. Finally, for the first time, we did it at the beginning.
Yes.
Not like 20 minutes in.
Phenomenal. I'm V.
And I'm Jess.
I have to say, I mentioned last time that I didn't like reading books and then talking about them immediately after finishing. And I've gone ahead and done the exact same thing, where I have not had time to digest what has happened in the book and actually then speak about it with, like, words. My emotions have not settled. But I thought of a way of expressing it, especially because I'm now reading The Secret Commonwealth, which is the second book of Dust, or the second book in the Book of Dust. The second volume in the Book of Dust series by Philip Pullman.
Yes, we understand.
And Dust is on my mind, and I'm trying to get my hands on the His Dark Materials show, because it's impossible to find when you don't actually have an HBO subscription. Anyways, Dust has been on my mind recently, is what I'm trying to say. And the way I kind of think about it is that when you absorb something, when you witness or experience something, you kind of, I don't know what the word is, but like, you just kick up a bunch of dust in the air. And you need, before you can actually see what's in front of you, you need to let that dust settle. And that's kind of what I'm waiting to do. That's what happens to me in regards to absolutely everything in my life. Like, something happens and I just need to let the dust settle before I can actually see the real shape of the thing. And I've gone ahead and not had enough time to digest my book. So I'm just going to be shitting out raw emotion and like off the cuff experiences.
Well, same goes for me.
Well, there
because
you go.
I literally finished my book yesterday, number one, but I only started seriously reading it Saturday. So.
Oh, yeah.
I'm in the same boat.
That's another thing that I don't like. I don't like squishing all my reading together. I like having breaks.
Yes, but I think I was too liberal with my breaks. And.
Well, that's another thing.
yeah. But I will say, like, I did enjoy my book.
Good. I very much enjoyed my book, but I really don't like reading books with big breaks in between them, between reading sessions. But at the same time, I'm one of those people who loves picture books or books with pictures, even if it's like a picture every so often at the top of a chapter or as a chapter heading or something, just because that forces you to stop when you're reading, and it forces you to pause. And that pause kind of sometimes lets little things trickle through, like little things that are just skimming in your subconscious that haven't quite penetrated your mind properly. Yeah. And it's in those pauses when you actually get the gist of things. And that's why I kind of like taking breaks. I like forcing breaks in reading, whether it's like, I sit down and I read for an hour and then I pause at a natural break in the book or whenever I want to, because I want to digest something. But that also applies to reading, you know, taking a pause at the end of a book just to let yourself be immersed in the whole experience, not just little segments of it.
Yeah, I mean, I had a weird experience reading this book. For one, I didn't feel like reading. I was like in a slight reading slump.
Yeah.
But it wasn't because the book was bad, because it was the opposite of that. And I think it did something really, really well, where every time I would take a pause to read, and my pauses were like weeks or days. And the thing with this book that I found so special about it was I could pick it up. I would remember exactly where I left off. I would remember exactly what happened.
Wow.
And it was so easy for me to get back into the like world that it made it extremely easy to read at the end. Like,
you know what?
Well, in the end of it all.
I mean, that's great that there's a book like that and that you can actually do that. But I found when I was younger, I used to sometimes be reading 20 books simultaneously.
I can't do that.
When I used to read so many books, I never used to have a problem with this, but I actually had a little bit of a, it's not even a problem. I had like a little bit of a learning curve with reading Split Tooth, my current book that I'm going to talk about later, because there's such a tonal shift. And I feel like maybe that didn't happen when I was younger because I was reading books that were pretty similar. It's definitely happening now because I'm trying to diversify what I'm reading. So each book that I read, I want it to be a little bit different than the last. And by doing that, there's this, like, when I start a new book, sometimes it just, I have to adjust to the way that sentences are constructed, to the perspective or narration style or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I had a huge adjustment period with Split Tooth. Like, it took me maybe half an hour to read like 10 pages at first. And this is a tiny book to begin with.
No, but I'm like, the reason why I don't read multiple books at a time anymore, and I think that's a good point to bring up, is that for me, at least, I feel like it's not fair to, like,
yeah,
split it up, but like split yourself up between like 20 different stories. I mean, it may work for some people, but it doesn't work for me. I just want to give the most possible time to one thing.
Yeah.
Like, I want to give myself 100% to one thing at one time. I don't want to, yeah, like,
someone put in a lot of effort, ideally, yeah, to create this story, create these characters and everything. And the least you can do is actually sit down and witness it.
Mm-hmm.
Or stand up, whatever. Run.
Run while you read, you know, go on a treadmill.
Hey, I've tried that. I've tried that before and it does not work.
What, running on a treadmill with a book?
Yeah. Like, well, when I want to get some serious reading done, but I want that kind of, I still want to get some exercise in.
So I do that. I will not lie, I actually do that, but I don't run. I just put the incline on the treadmill like super high, so I feel like I'm walking up a mountain or a really steep road.
Yeah.
And then I just walk.
I mean, that might actually really work for, like, if you're listening to audiobooks or something, because usually what I do now is I just put on a show or a movie or something if I'm on a treadmill. But the biggest problem with that is that while you're running, not, like, casually walking or exercising, like, you just like can't see the words on the page. And it's it's troubling. Anyways.
It's also troubling is that you're running with a book.
No, like, I prop up the book on the treadmill itself, and I've on whatever that front bar
Imagine is. Running in, like, real life, not on a treadmill with a book.
I probably would have tried that in my life if it wasn't for the criticism of people walking and looking down at their phones and, like, walking into traffic or, like, walking into a manhole or something.
Yeah, well.
And I don't have time or space for that kind of ridicule.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, I have to always preface my parts with something. This week it's going to be, I don't know how to pronounce Welsh names.
I don't think many people do.
So I'm sorry in advance. And I actually spent like an hour looking at Welsh names.
Oh.
And trying to figure out how to pronounce them properly and like listening. So like I'm not an ignorant fool.
Mm-hmm.
But there are just some names that I can't pronounce and I will not pronounce because I don't want to sound like a fool just like spitting out F's.
Yep.
Also, this is just going to be a spoiler free.
Oh no.
Not like last two times. I read The Bone Houses by Emily Lloyd-Jones. And like I said before, I read this book in 2 days, even though I've sat on it for like 3 weeks. And it was so good. This book made me cry 3 separate times.
Wow.
It was so good. And I got this book through Owl Crate.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. Mm. And like, I just have to say as an aside that the three books that I have read from Owl Crate, all good. They were all very good books. Out of the 17 that I have.
I was about to ask, like, what do you mean the 3 books? You've been subscribed to Owl Crate for a period of 2 years.
My TBR is very large, and sometimes I want to read other things, but I have read, I want to say, like, 3 books from Owl Crate, like, this being the third one, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And I have to say, 3 for 3, so I'm very, very happy about that.
Good.
So just to give you, like, a quick overview, it's a bizarre book.
Hey, so is mine.
It's something that I've never seen in the YA genre. I don't know if I would classify it as fantasy. I kind of would, but then I kind of wouldn't because it's like horror fantasy, but it's not really horror. And like, it's just like an amalgamation of like 10 different things.
Good.
Like historical fiction and like, oh, so good.
Ooh.
So it's about a girl named Adarine. and it's not pronounced.
Okay.
It's not pronounced how it's written.
All right.
I actually went to look this up, and she is the daughter of a gravedigger, and she basically, you know, takes care of burying the dead, and they have their own family graveyard, and like she has this really complex, weird relationship with death, and it's explored in the book in like really in depth. And basically the whole premise is that bodies of the dead who were like buried in the forest where there used to be magic are coming back to life as bone houses. So there's no like, they're like technically zombies, but I don't want to classify them as that because they're not exactly thoughtless, which is interesting.
Okay. So it's again kind of like this amalgamation of all these different genres or even like categories where it takes something that people are familiar with, but then transforms it into something maybe unexpected. Definitely non-stereotypical.
Yeah. So great. Now, I like, love those books. So they live, like, so the main character, Adarine, lives by the forest. And no one goes into the forest because that's where the bone houses live. But they don't ever come out of the forest because the magic doesn't extend further than that.
Oh.
But then the whole, like, summary or plot or whatever, the thing that, like, gets the novel going is that the bone houses start to leave the forest.
Oh.
And they start to attack the village where Adarine lives. Oh, by the way, Adarine goes by Rin, R-Y-N. Which I pronounced Rin for the first half of the book.
Yeah, I saw a picture that you had posted tagged currently reading. So I figured it was the bone houses or the, what is it called?
Yeah, the bone houses.
The bone houses. And I saw the name Rin and I thought, oh, what a cool name. I love that name, R-Y-N. But I guess it's pronounced
Reed. Yeah, so basically the bone houses are coming out of the forest and starting to attack the villagers. And this kind of coincides with her like saving a map maker who happens to be coming into the village to map out the like whales and all that stuff.
Oh man, I love map making in books. It's like so, that's perfect.
But that's the thing, it like has everything to do with maps and nothing to do with maps.
Okay.
So she saves him from a bone house and his name is Ellis, and then like the bone houses just keep coming out and they're like, we need to figure this shit out. Like, we need to, like, figure out why they're coming out of the forest. So they decide to then go to the other world or where, like, I guess it's, like, the land of the fairies.
Oh.
But not really. It's very weird. Like, I don't know how to explain it. I guess the best way to explain it, because I was doing a bit of research on this, is, like, you know, in Lord of the Rings, when the elves go across the ocean?
Yes.
Kind of. That's what it is.
Okay.
Like, they're going to die or whatever.
But is this actually based on fairy mythology?
It's based in Welsh mythology. Which what I did
the,
do...
Because what bit, is that called? Isn't that actually called Otherwhere?
I'm not going to pronounce it.
Oh, man.
I'm not going to pronounce it. Like, Anwen.
Like, the land... Yeah, the land of the dead. Okay. This is actually part of mythology. Like, she didn't just make up this
other
world.
No. Like, none of this is made up. Like, it's all living in, like, it's all mythology.
Yeah.
So they decide to go there to see if they could, like, fix this curse of, like, the bone houses coming out of the forest. And in the book, the way it's written is that you get a glimpse of the past, a glimpse of the present, and then, like, backstory, legends. It's really, really, really well done. It's cool. So beautifully written. And like Emily Lloyd-Jones just, I feel like, is like the only person to have like written a dead person or like a zombie in such a beautiful way.
Oh.
Because they're not just lifeless, you know, like sacks of
rotting flesh.
They're actually like, they still carry their memories.
Huh.
And they still, like, some of them are, like, just like people, some of them are bad and some of them are good. And just like people, they have missions that they're on and they serve a purpose. And
they're living their own,
you know,
lives, so to speak.
Yes, but the thing is that they all go to sleep in the day and they get up at night. So that's, like, the... And you can tell that they're dead because they're literally just bones.
I like this.
And I think the first instance we see this, it's like a shift. It's like a transitionary thing where when Ellis arrives to the town, you see he gets attacked by a Bonehouse. Then there's an even bigger Bonehouse attack from, I'm not going to say who or what, on the village.
Yeah.
And then they decide from that point on, okay, they're all, you assume that they're all bad. And one thing I really like is that Adarine, after she takes care of these bone houses, treats the bones with such respect.
Oh.
Anyway, so that's...
Because it's kind of within her upbringing.
Yeah, her duty or her upbringing. Yeah. Yeah. And so there's also, like this shift.
And I might be giving away some spoilers, but this kind of reminds me of Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Oh, I haven't read that.
But in the way that it's done well. Well, I didn't read it. I watched the movie. But in the same way that, like, spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen it or read it, that the zombies are not just life, or like they are lifeless, but they're not just these shambling, rotting masses of flesh that have, you know, that are only bent on eating up, like, living flesh. But it's so disappointing the way they do it. So I'm glad that... Emily Lloyd-Jones?
Lloyd-Jones, yeah.
That she actually does it well, because I love subverting expectations. It is my favorite.
And like the thing is that I'm just realizing it now, because I wish I had more time with this book, like to process it.
Yeah.
But there is a shift. Like I said, like at the beginning of the book, you see these bone houses attacking. In the middle of the book, you kind of start to like have this other idea of what they could be and who they are. And then there's this really, this is one of the parts where I cried, a beautiful moment in the book where a bone house helps Adarine with something. And like, there's like just this realization that came upon me when I was reading that I just started crying. It was just such a gentle moment.
Yeah.
And then the thing is, like, as this shift occurs, there's never really the loss of those bone houses that are like constantly like attacking or bad, because they served a purpose in a life, and they're just fulfilling their purpose from their past life. And like, I don't know how to explain it, but like, this book was nothing like I expected. Like everything I read,
good,
it was nothing what I expected. And I think Emily Lloyd-Jones did such a fantastic job of, number one, like the setting, again, aces for that. Like, it took me no time to get back into the book. It took me literally like half a page to get back into it. And I always had like I was taking like week breaks at this point. So like, usually I'd have to like, oh, hey, who's this? What's going on? And there was none of that.
Yeah.
And
the setting itself, does it take place in kind of our timeline, or is this in another world?
I think so. But like,
there's the like unspecified,
unspecified medieval time.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
That honestly is one of my favorites, though. Either that or like post-apocalypse. This is our world, but changed beyond measure.
Yeah.
Good.
So it was definitely a medieval book. Like, you could tell by like the way things were done.
Yeah.
But there was no like the town that she lived in, and like, all of that didn't really have like specified gender roles, which I liked.
Yeah.
It was really like, you know, there was a woman running a forge.
Okay. So maybe not historically accurate in all degrees, but like updated to modern
updated preferences. I wouldn't say updated. It was just such like a different town, because they lived on the edge of the forest, kind of thing, you know. So they didn't really like,
so it made sense even within a medieval setting.
Cool. Yeah, it did, because they kind of like lived outside of the norms of society, if you will, because everything was walled castles at that point.
It kind of
gave me like Game of Thrones vibe, like the show, in the sense of like setting. Nothing having to do with like the show or whatever, but like
just like human development timeline.
Yeah, like the main castle, like I'm not even going to pronounce it. Like
should anyone even try?
Like the main capital castle in the like city, kind of like how I pictured it was like Winterfell, but like not Winterfell dirty, like clean Winterfell. I don't know. It was probably is there even a clean Winterfell? I don't think so. So all in all, like I know I didn't really give much of the book away, and that was my intention, because I really feel like people should go into this book not knowing anything, because I want them to be as surprised as I was when I was reading it, and I want them to be as emotionally wrecked as I was when I was reading it. But a lot of it has to do with what I'm like currently going through, but loss is a thing that we don't really deal with until we're faced with it. And I think this book handles that so beautifully. Oh, it does it so, so, so well. And I'm so happy that it did that well. Like, the last three lines literally had me sobbing. And
really?
Yeah. But again, it's very situational and very personal to me. And, you know, like, it gave me a better understanding of death and dying. And
that's wonderful.
And I feel like, honestly, I feel like everyone should read this book. It's like, outside of like the characters and like the fantasy elements and the world, I feel like it gives a really nice message about our understanding of death and how we shouldn't be so scared of it. That's what I got from this book.
Yeah, and this actually reminds me a little bit of Split Tooth as well, not mm-hmm. on the same level or scale, mm-hmm. but like in terms of what I took from it, the highest thing that a story can do for you is express something within yourself that you might not have been able to put into words, or that you might not have been able to even express up until that moment. Mm-hmm. And stories to me are kind of a summarization of what is happening around us. And they really give insight in a way. Yeah. And when you find a story that does that at a specific time in your life, when you need to have those, you know, you need to see that take place in a story, mm-hmm. or someone gives you the words to express something that's happening to you, that is so powerful.
Yeah.
And just fantastic.
Yeah, I agree. And yeah, again, like, if anybody cares to know, I gave this book a 4.5 out of 5.
Wow.
Which is a 5 on Goodreads for me. I really didn't expect to like it this much. Like, it was a good story. It was well paced, had a great lead character. Even the Ellis was a really good, he's like what all male characters should be like. He was just he was so nice. He was just nice and so like respectful, and like not like your typical YA
toxic like masculine.
Yeah, he was really exactly.
Yeah,
yeah.
Toxic and, like, masculinity in YA is just abhorrent. It is so pervasive, and like it's set up as the ideal. Which is so shitty, because YA so often is read by younger people who then use this as an example or fuel.
And that's really sad.
To basically replicate in their own lives. And that's bullshit. So good.
Everybody should be like every guy, not every guy should be like Ellis, but Ellis is not a good role model. I wouldn't call him a role model, but he just measures his actions. You know, like there are certain points in the book where he's like, he wished he could have done this, but he didn't.
Yeah.
You know,
which means he's realistic. He's human.
Yeah. So, yes, everybody read The Bone Houses by Emily Lloyd-Jones. And I honestly, like, Owl Crate, good job on choosing this book. It was fantastic.
You know, they're generally really good at also considering that they give out books, or they ship out books as those books are being released. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not picking books based off of a wave of reviews that have already been that have already surfaced, which that's great. Like, good on them. They're really good at picking books.
I have to give it to them. Like, again, 3 out of 3. I mean, I have like 17 books from them, but out of the 3 that I've read, they've all been good.
So hashtag not sponsored, but you know, inquiries welcome.
Always. But I've been subscribed to Owlcrate for a really long time.
Yeah, that kind of makes me want to read it.
It was really good.
I love, like, one of my favorite things in books is just being blown away by something I didn't expect. And this book seems to check off both of those.
There was a major plot point that I kind of figured out towards the end of the book.
Mm-hmm.
But like I had like 30 pages left at that point. So like by the time I figured it out, like it was being presented to me.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, that major plot point just made the story like better because of like what the meaning behind it. So
yeah, so recommended to everyone.
Yeah,
I don't know if I would even recommend. I read Split Tooth by Tanya Tagak, and I don't know if I'd recommend it to everyone, but I thought it was phenomenal.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yes. It is just something, yeah.
Two things. Actually, no, just one thing.
Yes.
What, like, is it a novel or is it like...
I don't know. So this is actually something that is...
from reading it.
No. And this is partly why I wouldn't recommend it to everyone, but also why I would recommend it to everyone.
Mm.
So it doesn't have a very concrete form. Like, it is a very fluid book that just... It just kind of tears down all boundaries of sometimes language. So like, there's no linear time in this that I can really tell. I don't even know if the protagonist is the same person throughout the book. It's not quite a memoir. It's not quite myth and folklore. It is just like, it is so fluid in its shape and its movement that some people might not like that. Like, some people do like to sit down with a story, with a protagonist, and follow through on a linear scale. And even if it's not linear in terms of time, it's linear in terms of development.
Yeah.
And this book doesn't have any of that. But I also would recommend it because it's like kind of revolutionary. It's such a, it is a powerful story that just, the way I think about this book, it's kind of like a shapeshifter. And... It's fantastic.
Oh, okay.
So Tanya Tagak is an Inuit throat singer from Nunavut in Canada. And she's just this really radical person. She is, she doesn't give a shit about what you think. She's like stomping on all barriers I think she technically calls herself a punk throat singer or something. She's just such a like a powerful force in herself. I also started reading this book during a blackout. It was during a period of, I think, almost 3 days where I had no power. There were these fierce winds outside. I was reading by candlelight, and I just immediately, I read through half the book. It's a very short book, but I read through about half of the book within like, I guess, an hour or something. And I had to stop myself because I was like, what the fuck is happening? It did take me, like I mentioned before, it did take me a little bit. I had like this learning curve where I had to kind of get used to the prose because it is a little bit, I wouldn't even say jarring. It's just, it kind of jostles the complacency in your mind. Mm-hmm. And it's prose that then is followed by poetry, but then sometimes the poetry kind of slips into the prose itself. It's interesting.
It still doesn't tell me anything about what it's about.
So,
and why is it because called Split
I don't even, it doesn't even follow a plot per se. It just follows a lot of, I mean,
is there, it like there a is stream of consciousness? Like
not, I mean, there is definitely like a, there definitely is that kind of feeling. Sometimes it almost feels like there is a narrative monologue slipping through, but it kind of follows, it juxtaposes the kind of detached experiences of a younger girl in Nunavut. I don't, I forget what town specifically she's supposed to be living in. But it kind of follows her going through puberty, I should say. That should explain some of what her impressions are of the people around her, male and female. And then it kind of, then that's juxtaposed against a narrative style which is heavy on folklore and mythology, and it just that kind of drapes over her whole experience. But then she often experience what she's experiencing in her mundane everyday life that she's kind of discontent with. She often sees it through the perspective of myth, so you almost don't even know what you're seeing. Sometimes you're reading about her at school, and then or her in somebody's house, and then suddenly it's you're watching spirits and you're ingesting the northern lights, and it's like this kind of, it's interesting. You slip from one to the other. And sometimes it is a little bit jarring.
I feel like just by you explaining this book, it just seems like a drug trip in a book.
Like it is, but a really beautiful one.
Yeah, exactly. Like nothing like dangerous. Just like you ate some mushrooms and then this book came out.
Yeah. And like she's experiencing minor epiphanies here and there.
That's really cool.
And again, weird, I don't even know if the protagonist is the same person throughout.
Mm.
I don't even know what to make of this book. Maybe it's like a
general consciousness.
Yeah. Well, she often, there's a lot of talk about life and death and like the spirit and the physical and how, I don't even know. It's wibbly wobbly. But what I really liked about it.
How can you describe this book? It's wibbly wobbly.
What I really, really liked about it, like I said, the book itself is reminiscent of a shapeshifter. It is shifting all the time and you don't quite know what's reality and what's dream and what's actual myth that's coming to light. It also is really grounded, and the character as well, but the story is very grounded in the landscape, and not just the landscape, or like it's the feeling of the landscape.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what word would be applicable here. I know there's a word and there are many words, but you know me with words.
Find at this moment.
Words are so hard. It's kind of like it's the feeling of the environment of yourself.
Yeah, I know what you're trying to say, and I don't think there's anything better or any, like, I don't think there's any way better of saying it.
All right.
Because I can't think of anything. If anyone thinks of anything, let us know.
Yes, please correct me, because I've not distilled this book into anything that's passably coherent.
Yeah.
Like it focuses a lot, well, I shouldn't even say that, between these dreams and between, you know, the main character talking about the alpha, as she calls the bossy popular girl in the school, for example. You have a lot of like these feelings of hunger, these feelings of cold that kind of permeate her existence. Mm-hmm. And then those turn into, again, mythology and whatever. So honestly, it's nothing. I've never read anything like this before. I don't even know how to fit it into a category.
Like literature?
Category
of literature it fits into?
Or, is it poetry? Or just of anything.
Is it like...
Like even you mentioned last time, you mentioned that The Wicked Deep was so... it was so well written, partly because of how well spaced all these plot points were and like these revelations of information. And I love this book for the way it kind of releases information and releases emotion and releases these little nuggets of mythology as experienced through the character herself. But like they're all jumbled around, and it makes perfect sense. And then that kind of makes me think of even like what is a well-written story? A story really is just, it's not even, there's no formula for it. It's if this book can make sense of someone's experience over an indeterminate amount of time and space and worlds. I don't know. It's really wild, and it's a trip. It's interesting. I also have to say, another thing about this landscape of myth and story and even feelings.
Yeah.
The character often will just stop and listen and observe wildlife and observe the actual landscape and like things around her other than humans.
Yeah.
And there is this human side to the story, which I always overuse the word mundane, but like there's this human side to the story, which is mundane. It's full of like people fucking and people smoking cigarettes and people having these little vendettas against each other. Mm-hmm. And then there's the complete opposite side, which is the spirit that permeates everything. And I don't even know how to describe this, but at first I thought those two sides were kind of juxtaposed really oddly, because sometimes they'd slip into one another and sometimes they'd be kind of distinct. Sometimes the poetry would be one thing and then the prose would be another. But then the more I thought about it, the more I thought it kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Because it is jarring and a little bit discordant. Is that a word?
Let us know again.
Yeah, please. my vocabulary is not happening today. My brain is brined. Please send help. But it makes sense because, and I don't think I'm giving anything away because I was halfway through the book when I read, I don't know
what this book is about.
I don't know either. fuck. It's just great. Okay. Believe me. But there's this, I was halfway through the book before I even read the back cover and it says that the protagonist is pregnant. And then I was like, oh, okay. I guess this happens at the end of the book and it only happens about 2/3 into it.
Oh.
But the way you don't even know how she becomes pregnant. And again, there's this like gradual slipping between.
Yeah. The spirit and the real.
The mundane and this human aspect to the point where at the end, there's almost only the character retelling things that happened in her life through the spirit and through the landscape.
This seems so like bizarrely interesting that I need to read it for myself to just figure out what it like.
It is wild. I don't understand it at all. But then at the same time, like, I thought this was so weird that you have these two very different sides of someone explaining how something happened and what happened. And then, again, I thought it was so, it didn't make sense. But then it kind of, you start realizing that these are stories that the protagonist tells and how she relates information about what happens, how she actually is able to communicate things that happen, which is one perspective. I mean, I'm all for believing that this, you know, there are like fox demons and wolf spirits that are out to get you and hungry and stuff. But this is how people tell their own stories and tell their own traumas or tell their, you know, they make stories out of what happened.
So this reminds me of something that happened in my book where towards the end of the book, you have the main character's sister who's going around telling the villagers like what happened, and she's making up the story and like the retelling of it, and like, but then you get all the different perspectives from everybody. So you have like Etterine's sister telling the story like 10,000 different ways, and then you have what really happened, and then you have what should have happened, and then you have like what you wanted to have. Like, it was just it was just really well done. And then you have like reality and like the reality. It was good.
Okay, if I'm going to summarize what this book is, just based on the back flap, it is a coming-of-age story.
Oh, okay.
But again, like, there's this human aspect of things that actually happen where there is some abuse, there are very wrong things that happen to this character.
Yeah.
And then, like, a third of the way through, there's just this little slip into the spirit world, and the character is experiencing, I mean, I'm sure this is part of Inuit mythology and folklore, and I don't know enough about it to recognize everything that is brought up, but there's kind of recognition, this witnessing of a spirit thing, of a spirit occurrence. And then you move to the end of the book where most of it is her retelling things with the Northern Lights as being a character that has actionable consequences or does actionable consequences. And then you have other things that are happening that are given the reasons, or the reasons given for them happening are because of spirits and because of bad magic and whatnot.
Yeah.
Or like malevolent happenings on a spiritual level. And all of that, I think, is really just the character coping with what's happening on the mundane human level. But you're witnessing it from her retelling, which is so discordant and so all over the place and just, like, frankly, just magical. You really can't trust a lot of what the protagonist is saying, what she's saying, because she'll jump around from, like, suddenly she's 13 and then she's, like, 17 and she's pushing someone down the stairs because he was an authority figure in the past who has sexually abused her. And it's all told from this really distant perspective that is, again, like slips into another way of looking at things that I think is just calming for her. She uses the stories of folklore to kind of make sense of what's happening around her.
Yeah.
But then the book itself is someone making a story out of what happened. And I think even a couple of times she says, people think this happened, or people think this is what this is. Mm-hmm. But I know it's not reality. It's what I actually, this is what it is. And it's so interesting. And I don't even, like, there's no arguable reason for why that happens or why the character, you can kind of figure out why the character might need to do this. But it's just, I think I just need to think about this book for a little bit longer and, like, hold it for a little bit. It's all over the place. It's so wild and haunting, and you can't confine it to one thing other than it's a story about stories, perhaps. About human need and human nature. Mm. There's also something I really liked about this, and I mentioned it very briefly before, where the protagonist really is invested in the landscape around her. Like,
yeah.
You can kind of follow time a little bit in terms of following the seasons and by following the different kind of the behaviors of the animals during those seasons. And something I really, really liked about it is that this character is so immersed, character person. Like, I don't even know if this is a memoir or if this is Tagaq retelling things that happened in her youth through a character. I don't even know. It's such a, this book is like uncategorizable, but I want to read this one little segment that really, again, no spoilers because this is on the back flap.
Yeah.
And she says, "I'm so connected with my growing babies that they have become individuals to me." And that's the way that she sees the world. I feel like she sees the Northern Lights, and she sees the polar bears, and she sees like she becomes so familiar with them that they become part of her in a way, that they become part of her, their presence and their actual livelihood, so to speak. Like, they become part of her own narrative, and she witnesses that. And I love seeing that in literature. I love seeing that in any kind of story where, like, you just bear witness to something that is non-human. And you're not fitting it into any one thing. You're not fitting it into your own categorization, or like, you're just witnessing it. And there are so many of these little things where, especially when the protagonist is younger, she's so curious and so ready to like witness it on a sensory level. I love it so much. So if this mess of of what I just said doesn't make sense to you, that's fine, because that's basically how I feel after reading this book. It is,
I mean,
it's so all over the place, and it's haunting, and it's, I think it's supposed to be that way, unless I'm just not understanding it. But I absolutely
no,
loved
I,
it.
I think, I feel like the way that you described it was very comprehensive, despite the fact that you still don't know what the book is about.
Yeah.
It's just, it sounds interesting. Like, I want to know.
It's kind of like, I know on an emotional level what the book is about, but I can't put that into words because it's all over the place. And that's exactly how the book is presented, which is why I mentioned The Wicked Deep, because like, that is presented to you in a very methodical way, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And that works really well for that book. But this book is presented in such a scattered way, like a scatter of temporal and physical places.
Yeah.
And like, of even worlds, and that works so well.
That's good.
I loved it.
Like, it's something that I don't know. Like, I never really considered reading it because I did. First of all, I like had no clue what it was about.
Yeah, but I like, still the don't. Way that you so just,
like, no, but like in the sense that it's not something I would naturally gravitate towards. It's not be like, oh, I want to read this. It's more like, I don't know. If I was like bored, I guess I would read it.
It's a super interesting experience.
That's the thing. Like, what you're telling me right now is making me more inclined to wanting to read it.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would read it in the, I don't know if I would read it in the near future, but definitely something to put on my radar.
Yeah. If you have the opportunity to read it, then read it. Because
Yeah, definitely.
This was a trip.
Yeah.
It's, I don't even, is it a book? I don't even know. You
it's
tell
just
me.
Some, it's some sort of art form.
It really is. This was,
yeah,
it was experimental.
I feel like Tanya Tagaq does that. Like, she takes something that
just tear down definitions and boundaries.
Yeah, like, it's just like she takes something and throws it on its head and then just tears it apart, and like, it's beautiful.
Yeah, And it just, it started,
and it works.
And it works. And it makes me think, like, what even is a story? Like, what is a book? But like, what is?
She's the only one that's capable of doing something like that.
Yeah.
I feel like, if it were anybody else, I feel like I would take that book and I would be like, what the fuck am I reading?
Yeah.
But because it's her, really well. Too. Because it's her, and because she's, like, so special, and she has, like, she's had special experiences that probably neither one of us have had, yeah. But a lot of people haven't had. I don't know, like, it just,
she's
like
super
her.
Special. I also have to, yeah. I have to mention, I almost bought the audiobook to this book, because
oh, yes.
Tagak narrates it, and yeah. interspersed between her, the actual prose and poetry yeah. of the book, she does throat singing in between. So the book actually has some pictures in it, wow. and I don't know who illustrated them.
What should be her?
Honestly, it could be her, because fuck it, she's capable. Something else. But she does throat singing in between all of these different passages, and she has a certain kind of monotone eloquence to the way she speaks, and it's mm-hmm. mesmerizing. And if you do have the yeah. option to listen to this book, I would say go for it, because that is an experience, and it's a trip in itself.
I almost would want everybody to listen to at least one Tanya Tagak track.
Yeah.
Just to, like, get a feel for who she is, because I feel like you get to know her through her music.
Yeah.
And once you...
She has so many different... She's produced a bunch of albums. She also has... She's also got a ton of, like, live performances that are just up on YouTube that you can listen to. Just honestly listen to the sample of her audiobook, because there is some throat singing in there.
Oh, really?
I had a full-on ASMR experience listening to that.
Oh, really?
It was good.
That's good.
So that's my very confused opinion about a non-categorizable experience. Book.
Oh, you're not even going to call it a book at this point.
Is it a book? I don't know.
It's an experience.
Everything is up in the air right now. I wanted to read some mail this time around, or like mm-hmm. do a send-off of something. So I know this is another email about the first episode that we did on our favorite books, but
yes.
people really like favorite books, and it says a lot about a person, so... I think we should read another letter that we got from our friend Patsy.
Yes. We've known her for a long time, and
yeah.
it was fun to see her write in. And she presented to us as her favorite book. And I remember actually having a conversation about this book with her when it first came out. So, like, I'm actually happy that she's, like, it's still stuck with her. So her favorite book is... Or favorite series
one of them.
Is, one of them.
Another complicated answer.
Yeah. Well, I'm presenting the first one because I feel like most people would know about it. It's Persepolis, and I can't say that I've read it, unfortunately. And I'm a big reader.
Me either, and I feel terrible.
I'm a big reader of graphic novels, and I feel like Persepolis is like has become one of the classics.
Yeah. I've studied it. I've never read it. And that I think is a fault that I need to amend very soon, because it's been on my TBR for a decade.
In her email to us, she writes that, so she writes, what makes Persepolis for me is the broaching of a chapter in modern-ish history most people don't get to see or learn about, since it isn't a traditional white narrative, and that it's not tied to events solely based in or around the European and North American centers of influence. It doesn't try oh my God, what's wrong with me? It doesn't try to present any big figureheads as the main focus, or aggrandize anything to ludicrous levels of navel gazing. Rather, dealing with how events outside of someone's control can change everything around you and those people who matter in your life, for better or for worse.
Yeah. She did also mention a couple of other books, but...
She did.
For brevity.
For brevity's sake.
So the other books that she mentions, though, Patsy is an interesting person who is basically Lara Croft in archaeologist form. And... She says that her nother, yep. Persepolis isn't just a good enough favorite for her. That's her favorite series. Then she says, the French language book that struck me was Nikos Kanzantzakis.
Oh, what? Dear.
Nikos Kanzantzakis's La Dernière Tentation. And then she also says, as for my favoritest English language book, it's life-defining in its less dramatic kind of way, and I'm cheating again because I'm going to refer to an author as a book because they basically wrote the same thing, in my opinion, with tweaks where needed. I'm referring to Agatha Christie, y'all. I've been high-key obsessed with whodunits for years, and I would take out as many of the Hercule Poirot, Miss Marple, slash miscellaneous crime things as I could from the library as a preteen and beyond. So I kind of just wanted to bring up Patsy because she's a dear friend of ours. But also, like, those are completely different books from all over the place in different languages. She's read in Spanish, but she said that she's not nearly read enough books written in Spanish to be able to pick a favorite. But, like, here is someone whose interests are all over the place. And you can still kind of choose favorite books from different time periods in your life, from different experiences that you've had.
Yeah, from different influences.
Yeah. I just find that so interesting. I feel like you learn so much about someone just by what books that, like, they read.
I had an inkling about what kind of books Pat would like, and this kind of confirms it.
Yeah. So do you know what you're going to be reading next episode?
Yes, I will be hopping on this hype train and be reading The Queen of Nothing by Holly Black. Yes, 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 I can't wait.
I was wondering why you suddenly became an automatic robot. Okay. I have no idea what I'm going to read next episode.
Well, we can figure that out.
Maybe we should do a poll or something because
Let's try a poll. I'll vote in the poll.
Please do.
I will.
The mood. I've just basically been, like, unhinged from literature at this point because of Split Tooth. Yeah. And I don't quite know where to go. I don't even feel like literature is the next step along this way, if I'm even on a way. This book is a trip. It did also remind me, though, of, and I'm gonna completely fuck up this name, of Sjón? The Icelandic writer. No. It kind of reminds me of his work. I picked up, I think it's called The Blue Fox or something, a couple of years ago, and From the Mouth of the Whale, and I really liked those books, but I don't think I finished either of them. I just wasn't in the right mood.
Maybe that's time for that.
Maybe. But it's another small book, and I do like to stagnate my books so that I read a big book and then a small book, and I just, Split Tooth is it's a small book. You could read it in one sitting if you wanted to.
Yeah.
And I don't know where to go, so we'll see about that.
Yeah.
Send me your recommendations if you want at bookrantpodcast@gmail.com.
And if you want to be excited with me about Queen of Nothing by Holly Black, please let me know on Twitter at bookrantpodcast.
But also on Instagram if you want to check it out.
Yeah.
Oh, and also,
I'll be reading that book in like 6 days. So
it's going to be a hype session.
I'm going to be so unhinged. I'm pre-warning everyone.
Yeah. I bequeath my unhingedness
okay, good.
Upon you. I don't even know what's happening with my body or my brain right now after I've read Split Tooth. Also, if you're still listening to us rambling, honestly, thank you so much. Both of us are kind of floored by just the reception that we've gotten by people listening to us. It is really exhilarating and kind of humbling, and thank you so much for doing that.
We see every week on our hosting site, like, how many people have listened to the episode, and every week it just, like, makes me so happy to see the number go up. Even though it's not like the biggest number, it just makes me really happy. And, you know, like, putting stuff out there that we both like to do, and then having it acknowledged by other people and people finding interest in what we do is, like, really humbling, and it's really, like, gratifying and makes me happy.
Yeah, because it's not that reading is, like, a niche
no
interest, but I don't know. Thanks, everyone who's listening this
morning. Yeah. Thank you.
And if you want to show your love for us,
you can write in.
Yeah. Well, write in, but also rate us on iTunes. Even if you hate us, write how much you hate us. Just write a review. That's, you know, get your opinions out there.
And if you do actually like us, you can rate us.
Yes.
And you can also write a review, like V said.
Yes.
So, yeah.
And that's it. I'm going to go unfurl myself, atom by atom, and collapse into a pile of doubt and indecision and unknowingness. I don't know what's happening to me. Well,
that's all.
That's it.
Thank you. Bye.
Goodbye.
Oh my God, you're having a meltdown.
I'm having a moment.